Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, June 1st, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get the details about Perseverance Theater's end-of-season summer bash. Margie Hamburger from the City Museum will be here to highlight their local heroes walking tours. We'll talk with Marta Lestefka about a classical strings workshop for youths. And we'll get a preview of Wednesday night's Writer Showcase taping at 360. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 66 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week on our program, we're bringing you a series on rural sanitation in Alaska. The state has the nation's highest rate of people living without modern sanitation, more than 6% or 3,300 households. A high number of Alaska Native people are in remote villages living without modern plumbing. Today, KMBA's Jocelyn Estes takes a look at the impact water and lack of plumbing have on public health.
Kuithluk's 750 residents live in a village 400 miles west of Anchorage. The village is accessible only by boat and plane, except when the Kuskokwim River is frozen solid and you can drive on it. That time of year, this is how you get household and drinking water.
You have to chip the ice away. You have to chip and chip, especially when it was really cold and the ice was thick.
Until Claudia Hansen's home gets hooked up to a new piped water and sewer system, her son hauls ice from the Kuithluk River. Once it melts and the silt settles, it's ready to use. Alaskans without plumbing also collect rainwater or buy treated water by the gallon, often carrying home 5-gallon jugs weighing about 40 pounds each. 50 miles downriver in Tuntutuliak, Lucy Lupi says fetching water is a young man's job.
Since my husband is getting older, it is harder for him to get ice.
People conserve water when it comes at such effort or cost. The average American uses 80 to 100 gallons of water a day, including a gallon each time for hand washing. The World Health Organization says 15 gallons per day per person is needed to stay clean and healthy. In underserved Alaskan villages, people use an average of 2 gallons per person per day, not enough for frequent hand washing. Add in overcrowding and conditions are ripe for the spread of viruses and bacteria. Dan Winkleman is CEO of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
It's really about having enough water, so many gallons per day, and having that availability to you and your family where you actually have it available, you're being able to use it. And we've seen cellulitis and skin infections and respiratory illness decline because of that.
CDC studies show Alaskans without plumbing get invasive pneumococcal infections up to 11 times more often than other Alaskans. In southwest Alaska, where 40% of the homes lack plumbing, 1 in 4 infants is hospitalized for severe respiratory infection. And rates of skin problems, such as antibiotic-resistant skin infections and abscesses, are high. Then there's the matter of sewage. When there's permafrost, permanently frozen ground, and high water tables, people can't use outhouses. They use a bucket fitted with a toilet seat, a honey bucket, which gets emptied every day or so. People are frustrated, but most say they would not move just to have plumbing. Many villagers have strong ties with extended family in their village. And many rural communities have thrived for centuries because they're ideally situated for a food gathering. Stanley Hawley of Kivalina says he's driven by the imperative and rewards of supporting his family with food from nature.
Once we get exposed to that livelihood, that way of living, it gets ingrained in our spirit and in our soul and in our psyche.
Later, we'll hear about some of the reasons so many still live without plumbing. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Join KTOO and 360 North June 1st for a live taping of a town hall on housing and homelessness. 1 year ago, we launched A Roof, examining affordable housing and homelessness issues statewide. What have we learned? Join host Casey Kelly and a panel of experts as they discuss appropriate affordable housing, emergency homeless services, housing first, and more. That's June 1st at 360 in the K2 building at 5 p.m.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 1st, 2015. It's about 6.5 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host. And now from this Juno City Douglas, the Douglas...
Juno Douglas Juno, City Museum.
Thanks, Marjorie. It's Marjorie Hamburger. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you. So among other things, you have these local heroes walking tours coming up. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. This is an initiative in cooperation with the library. So not that long ago, the museum and the library kind of hooked up as a department. And every summer, the library does a summer reading program. And this year, their theme is heroes, or every hero has a story. I think that's their theme. So kind of in partnership with them, I'm offering some walking tours for, child-friendly, hopefully for kids and their adult partners to come and walk around town and learn some stories of some people that might be considered our local heroes.
Yeah, can you tell us a few names of the local heroes?
Yeah, well, actually, we just had a big program on Saturday about Zach Gordon, and he's definitely a local hero that we'll talk about who he was and why we have a youth center named after him and what he did to make this community a better place. Another exciting person is Shel Simmons, the aviator, and was involved with really what ended up becoming Alaska Airlines, but also has some fun stories to tell about, daring rescues, kinds of things like that. We'll have to go by the Sobolov building and talk about Walter Sobolov and remember his contribution to many, many things. And so, some of these names will be familiar because they're on buildings or they're on street names or something. Other names might be less familiar to kids and families, but are people that I think we want to remember.
Absolutely. It'll be nice to give narratives to those places and stories, get to know the folks.
Yeah.
It sounds like fun. When are they?
Well, the first one is this Saturday, and that's the 6th, June 6th, and we'll kick off at 10 o'clock in the morning. The program, I should just mention, is free, but it is good to register in advance just to confirm a spot because we're keeping it kind of small, hopefully around 10 folks total, just so that it can be intimate and everyone can hear each other as we walk around town. So the first one's this Saturday, and then I've got three more scheduled. I'm looking at my notes here, so I remember my dates. Did I put them in? Yes, I did. June 27th, there'll be one, July 18th, and August 22nd. And people could go ahead and, sign up for one in advance if they know that one of those times is a good time for them. And all starting at 10 o'clock on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like fun. What else is going on at the museum?
Well, I also, while we're talking about walking around town, we also want to just make sure that folks know that we give walking tours every week. They're in the afternoons, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday afternoon. We have a walking tour that leaves at 1:30. It's not that we don't welcome kids. We definitely do. But, maybe it's a little bit denser material or something. Also, those ones are fee-based. But we encourage local folks, and visitors to come and join us and learn about our town's history and look at some of the buildings and the sites and the landscape and so forth, because that plays such a big role in our community. So those happen all throughout the summer till the end of September, basically as long as cruise ships are here. And I also want to make a plug here, since it's the beginning of June, and this is a time when I really like to push the Juno History Grant. So that applications for that are due the end of this month on the 30th. And those support folks who have an idea about a project they'd like to do that highlights something about Juno history and maybe are looking for a little bit of funding to make that thing happen. And if people have questions about that, they can call the museum or hop on our website and learn a little bit more about it. But those applications are due at the end of this month. So,
can you give us a quick example of somebody who's received that before? Or what kind of projects work for that?
Yeah, there's a number of publications that are maybe familiar to people. Actually, last year we granted the St. Nicholas Orthodox Church in a reprint of their historical booklet. They wanted to update that since it had been last published, add new photos and stuff like that. So they were looking for some funding to help make that happen with the design and so forth. Another thing, if people go over to the Douglas Boat Harbor, which is actually officially called the Mike Pusich Boat Harbor in Douglas, and to make sure that we all know about that, there's some really great signage out there that I believe it was his daughter and a group of folks who put that together. And again, we're looking for some funding to help get those signs built and put in place there.
Sounds good. What's the range of awards that one can receive?
You mean in terms of funding?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit, funding is somewhere in the $1,000 to $2,000 range. I mean, if we got a great, great project and the committee decides that we can afford it, they might go a little higher. Sometimes some projects have been only a portion has been funded, even though somebody might submit something larger, but for various reasons. And I also just want to say that we've had school groups, we've had teachers apply, and that's really fun. So if there's any teachers now that school's out and they're thinking about something they might want to do next year with their kids, we had a publication about the flume stories that was done some years ago. That was a school project. So that's another fun thing to think about.
All right. What about current exhibits?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're all about photography this summer. We've got a great exhibit about six commercial photographers that span over 100 years of Juno history, even predating Winter and Pond, although Winter and Pond are in there. We've got their real camera, which they took out in the field, and it's like ginormous, and you just think, how did you haul that out there? So that's fun to see. But so stories about, we have their photographs, but also about the people and what role they played in the community. Then we have this really fun exhibit that the locals have been enjoying called Who's Who. And Joseph Alexander was a photographer here, commercial photographer for a bunch of years. A lot of older people in the community had their photos taken, remember him well. And so we've got a bunch of photos that are unidentified. And people can come on in and see if they can help us name who these people are.
Yeah, how's that going? Have people?
Yeah, going really well. In fact, some people are getting so excited that they're hopping on our website and we're showing them how they can look at the collection online and just keep going at home on their computer. And we've been getting some great response for that.
Give or take, how many photos do you have of his?
Well, I think there's like 6,000 unidentified photos.
Wow.
But I mean, I know one gal, I think she's identified 50 or 60 of those folks. So so that's been a fun thing to see happen. And then lastly, I want to also plug this exhibit called Picture Stitching. And that is a high school show. It's some students who were working with a teacher who was teaching in the Choice Program at JDHS. And were learning how to digitize photos. And they did this stitching thing with taking a historical photo and then taking a contemporary photo from the same point of view and doing magical things on the computer, which I don't know how to do. And kind of overlaying and burning and blurring, whatever they do, and making these really cool composite photos that have this kind of look back into time but also contemporary. So they're really unusual, and we've got a great little exhibit of those pieces.
Yeah, I saw a couple striking images online, and you know, I used to be really impressed by before and after pictures. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's before and after. It's sort of artistically melted into one.
Right. It has this kind of ghost-like quality. And
what a fun project for high school students as well.
Yeah. And then, of course, and then to get to hang their work in a museum. So that's been, really exciting for them.
Very cool. Anything else you want to tell us about?
Well, just a reminder again, the first of these Local Heroes Walking Tours happens this Saturday. And give a call to the museum or stop by to sign up. We still have spots.
Remind us of the phone number.
Oh, why am I going to remember? Forget that. 586, here it is, 3572. And so if we're looking for kids. Oh, I should actually tell details. Parents or adults with a child in tow, so partnerships. If a child is over the age of 12 and wants to come unattended, that's, we think they can do well with that, too.
And remind us who you're going to be talking about this Saturday morning.
Well, there'll be a number of people like Zach Gordon and Walter Soboloff and Elizabeth Kratovich.
So you do
as we
all
walk,
of them.
Yep. We'll start at the museum and we'll kind of go wandering around town and stop at various places and remember those folks.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Marjorie Hamburger, thank you for your time today.
Okay, thanks for inviting me.
Yes, yeah.
Bird note. Tree swallows glisten in the June sunlight. As they swoop and glide, their arcs interlacing in the air. Agile, elegant, masters of flight, the swallows gather near their nest boxes, clustered on posts at the edge of a marsh. A white feather flutters down among them. One swallow snatches the feather in its bill and flies upward as another swallow gives chase. After a moment, the lead bird lets loose the feather, which drifts lazily, until the second bird swoops in to catch it in midair. The aerial ballet of swallows and feather swirls on for minutes as other swallows join in the feather chase. Are the swallows just playing, or are they competing for these feathers? Loose feathers are an important resource for tree swallows. They line their nests thickly with them, a feather bed for nestlings. Continuing research suggests that as tree swallows build their nests, it is the females who collect the feathers. Their aerial dance may well be a competition for nest lining material. And the males in the feather chase? Maybe they're just playing along. Bird Note's producer is John Kessler. And our executive producer is Dominic Black. Nancy Rumble composed and played the theme music. I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering coffee break service for the office, delivering fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses around Southeast. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 1st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and now in the studio with me is Mr. Tom Robinault. He is the marketing and box office manager over there at Perseverance Theater. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you.
Did I get your title right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Like that. But I act and direct, too, and, you know, like everybody at the theater, we do all sorts of things.
Wear many hats.
Yes.
All right, so today we're going to talk a little bit about the end-of-season summer bash. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be – it's just a way for us to get all the artists and volunteers from the year to come out and celebrate the last year's season. We'll have Susu and the Prophets there and Shona Osterhout and her husband, Austin Osterhout. I'm sure many people know who Susu and the Prophets are. They'll be there. They'll be our live entertainment. There'll be a no-host bar. There'll be, if you saw the last show, Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England, the diorama will be open up and people can take pictures in that. And, yeah, it'll be dancing, it'll be food, drinks, music, and just a way to celebrate and get together as a artist community and thank each other and celebrate.
And everyone's welcome.
Everyone's welcome. Yeah, there is an admission fee, so it's $20 for general public. It's $10 for artists and volunteers from the previous season. But yeah, so there's a admission fee just for us to help cover the cost of the party and things like that.
What time does it start up?
It starts at 7 o'clock. It's on June 6th. It starts at 7 o'clock and it'll go until. we can't go anymore.
This Saturday sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It must feel great where you are right now. You just finished another successful season.
Yeah, it was a great season, from Chicago to a quirky little crazy comedy at the end of the year, Seven Homeless Mammoths Wanted New England, and having the success of The Odd Couple as well, and taking really all of those, all except for two of those shows over to Anchorage, which we, you know, that's a big load. Next year, all of our shows, every single show will go over to Anchorage next year. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a way to, like, celebrate the company's growth and to celebrate also, regional theater, statewide regional theater, and the goals that we have set that we're meeting at the moment, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you have going on this summer?
This summer we're not doing Summerfest, which we had last summer, obviously, but we are going to have like a new play fest. I think we're going to call it Summerfest Unplugged, and we'll have two Alaskan stories, actually, that we will be workshopping. One of them is Into the Wild, and that's something that we've been working on for a couple of years now, which is a musical. And then another one is House of Dreams, which is it's a story about Drew Barrymore used to come to Alaska and visit this family on a small island in Aleutian Chains and hang out. And no one really knows why or what, but that's what this a writer is writing about for that story. So we'll be workshopping both of those. I know Boston Christopher will be working on the House of Dreams one, and we'll have a lot of out-of-town musical theater actors for the Into the Wild, but there's a couple of Broadway actors coming for that as well. So we'll have a good mix of local and national talent, and then we'll have those two will perform on a weekend, and they'll be workshopping. Each show will workshop for about a week, and then we'll culminate into a weekend performance.
Sounds good. And you want to give us a little preview of next season?
Absolutely. We're starting off with Othello, which is good for us. We haven't had Shakespeare in a long time, so Othello is coming to the main stage. After that, it was going to be A Night with Janis Joplin. A lot of people were looking forward to that, but we replaced it with a great musical. Couldn't quite get the rights to that one. We replaced it with Sweeney Todd, which I know is, many people are looking forward to that. We also have, after that, a world premiere is called Our Voices Will Be Heard. After that, we have a new play, or a newish play, by Sarah Rule, which has been hitting the theater world by storm. It's very, very funny. It's one of the funniest plays written in the last, 10 years. It's called In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play, and I'll let you imagine what that's about. And then we close out the play, the season, with a great two-person play, Annapurna, which is directed by artistic director Art Roach. This is a good announcement to make, that we are extending our early bird deadline till the end of this week, so through the party on June 6th. So we've had a lot of people subscribe. We've had more than we've had in the past, so we just want to keep it going and give people that extra discount for a week longer, just as a thank you to all the people who have been subscribing, and to the community of Juneau who's coming out and supporting us.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, let's all go celebrate this Saturday night.
Absolutely. It'll be a lot of fun. We hope to see you there.
7 o'clock?
7 o'clock, June 6th.
Susu and the Prophets.
How can you go wrong?
Music. Yep. Take pictures in the diorama, everything.
Exactly.
Great, Tom. Thanks for your time. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Cool.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
She was a waitress at the only joint in town. She had a reputation as a girl who'd been around down Main Street after midnight. Brand new pack of cigs, a fresh one hanging from her lips, a beer between her legs. She'd ride down to the river and meet with all her friends. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Sonny was a loner, older than the rest. He was going in the Navy, couldn't pass the test, so he hung around town. He sold a little pot to lock off when the Sunny. One day he got caught, but he was back in business when they set him free again. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Sonny's playing eight ball at the joint where Sherry works, with some drunken out of towner put his hand up Sherry's skirt. Sonny took his pool cue, laid the drunk out on the floor,
stuffed a dollar in a tip jar, walked on out the door. She's running right behind him, reaching for his hand. The road goes on forever, and the party never ends. They jumped into his pickup, Sonny jammed her down in gear. Sonny looked at Sherry, said, let's get on out of here. The stars were high above them, the moon was in the east. The sun was setting on them when they reached Miami Beach. They got a hotel by the water and a port of Bombay gin. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Delta contraband. Sonny met the Cubans in a house just off the route with a briefcase full of money and a pistol in his boot. The cards were on the table when the law came busting in. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. The Cubans grabbed the goodies, Sonny grabbed the jack. He broke the bathroom window and climbed on out the back. Sherry drove the pickup through the alley on the side, where a lawman tackled Sonny and was reading him his rights. She stepped out in the alley with a single shot for 10. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. They left the lawman line, they made their getaway, got back to the motel just before the break of day. Sonny gave her all the money and he blew a little kiss. If they ask you how this happened, say I forced you into this. She watched him as his taillights disappeared around the bend. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. After midnight, just like it was before, 21 months later at the local grocery store, Sherry buys a paper and a cold six-pack of beer. The headlines read that Sonny is going to the chair. She pulls back on the main street in her new Mercedes Benz. The road goes on forever and the party never ends.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 1st. It's about 30 minutes after the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 1st of June, 2015. It was on this day, 1974, Henry J. Heimlich published his Heimlich Maneuver in the Journal of Emergency Medicine. The American Red Cross still recommends it, recommends the 5-and-5 approach. 5 sharp blows to the back, followed by 5 abdominal thrusts if the back blows are not effective. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. The poet John Masefield, born Ledburgh, England, 1878, poet laureate of Great Britain for 37 years. It's the birthday of Charles K. Ogden, born Fleetwood in Lancashire, England, 1889. He was a linguist, and he worked on what he called basic English, Basic, British, American, Scientific, International, Commercial, a simplified English-based language of 850 core words designed for international uses. And it's the birthday of the neuroscientist and writer Colleen McCullough, born in Wellington, Australia, 1937, studied neuropsychology in Sydney, got a job as a research associate at Yale. She was pretty happy there for about 10 years, and then she discovered that her male colleagues were making twice as much money as their female counterparts. She said, "I loved being a neurophysiologist, but I didn't want to be a 70-year-old spinster in a cold water walk-up flat with one 60-watt light bulb, which is what I could see as my future." And so she turned her hand to writing. And her second novel came out in 1977, The Thorn Birds, an international sensation, sold more than 30 million copies. She quit her job, moved back to Australia, and wrote more than 20 books afterward. She died earlier this year, Colleen McCullough. Here's a poem for today by Robert Phillips, Grandfather's Cars. Every 2 years, he traded them in. As soon as the ashtrays get full, he said with good humor. Always a sedate four-door sedan, always a Buick, always dark as the inside of a tomb. Then one spring, Grandfather took off to trade, returned, parked proudly in the driveway, shaven a haircut 2 bits, blared the horn. Grandmother emerged from the kitchen into daylight, couldn't believe her eyes. Grandfather sat behind the wheel of a tomato-red Lincoln convertible, the top down. Shaven a haircut 2 bits. "Roscoe, whatever are you thinking?" she cried. Back into the kitchen she flew. No matter how many times he leaned on that horn, she wouldn't return. So he went inside, found her decapitating strawberries with scorn. "Katie, what's wrong with that automobile? All my life I've wanted something sporty." He stood there, wearing his Montgomery Ward brown suit and saddle shoes. His face was warty. She wiped her hands along her apron, said words that cut like a bandsaw. "What ails you? They'll think you've turned fool. All our friends are dying like flies. All. You can't drive that thing in a funeral procession." He knew she was right. He gave her one baleful look, left, and returned in possession of a four-door Dodge, black, practical as nails. Grandfather hated that car until the day he died. Grandfather's Cars by Robert Phillips, from Spinach Days, published by the Johns Hopkins University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 1st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 25 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by the Juno Jazz and Classics, Reggie Schapp. Welcome, Reggie.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, production and production manager and administration manager for Juno Jazz and Classics, right? And Marta Lestufka is also in the studio, and you are a parent and education coordinator for the Classical Strings Workshop for Youth coming up, right?
That's right.
Welcome. So tell us about this Classical Strings Workshop and how it came to be.
Well, education and outreach is very important to Juno Jazz and Classic. It's one of our founding part of our mission statement. And this year we're going to be doing something a little bit new. We're going to be doing a summer string workshop as part of our Jane and Tom Stewart Education Fund. So I'm going to let Martin tell you a little bit about what the actual workshop's going to be.
All right.
Okay. So August 12th, 13th, and 14th, We're offering an all-day, we're not calling it a camp, but it's an all-day intensive for classical string musicians ages 10 and up. It'll be from 9 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. It's made up of master classes, small ensembles, an orchestra class, sectionals, with about an hour and a half of food and play in the middle of the day if you're getting a little bit worried about your kid sawing away for 6 hours. But we have two incredible artist instructors coming. One is Tracy Helming. She's been up to Juneau several times for our winter string workshop. So a lot of students know her and love her. She's really a master teacher. We're very, very excited that she's excited to help inaugurate this little summer workshop. And she's also bringing Rajan Krishnaswamy, who is a cellist from Seattle, who's also really wonderful and excited about. So this is a camp for violins, violas, cellos, and bass.
Okay. And you said 10 years and older. What sort of playing level should one be at to come to this camp?
Well, right now we're open. That's part of the reason why it's great to register early, so we know what the students' levels are. But right now it's any level, and we'll divide the kids according to their ability. Some kids are Suzuki players, so then that when they fill out their registration, they can say what Suzuki book they're in, or their school teacher can talk to Jazz and Classics, or their private instructor if they have one.
So probably not for someone who's never played before.
No, they have to be able to play a couple of songs for sure. Okay. And it's a big day of playing.
Right.
So they have to be able to play.
It's really nice if they can read music, know their instrument, but we're not looking for, this is just not for masters. It's for the upper level beginners all the way up to the kids that are in the master classes at school.
Okay, so intensive three-day workshop. Looks like fun. It's going to be out at UAS, you say?
Yes, and the cost for the full 3 days is $125, which, depending on your perspective, sounds either overwhelming or a great deal. From my perspective, it's a great deal. And if you break down, we figured out it was $5 an hour, which is kind of amazing. And if there's families that need a little help paying for that, we're working really hard to create a scholarship fund, and we're taking donations for the camp if anybody wants to contribute. And there is a wonderful, small, very generous foundation in Juneau that is matching all donations for this camp.
Wow. Very cool. If somebody wants more information, where should they go?
Jazzandclassics.org is a great place out there on the website. There is a sign-up sheet and everything already out there on the website, or then call the office at 463-3378. We do have scholarships available, and the only thing we're requesting is that they get a letter of recommendation from their teacher, whether it be their school teacher, their private instructor.
Okay. Marta, you are the parent of some musicians, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what music has done for your kids?
Well, our family kind of values music from the get-go. My husband is a musician. I'm a singer. He's an instructor here in town. It's a value for us. We know how much it's meant to our lives growing up, personally. For our family, it was mandatory that they learn something. We don't care if it's a kazoo, but they have to choose an instrument. And if they decide to quit classical strings, well, they better pick up spoons or something else. That's how valuable it is. So we say you have to learn math, and you have to learn to read, and you have to learn how to play an instrument. And for me, we have different perspectives, but for me, I wasn't a child that was given the opportunity to play an instrument, and I regret it. And I look at my husband, who anywhere we go in the world, he can pick up his trombone, if he's dragging it around the world, and play. And I love that communion that he's able so easily to have, and I want our kids to have that. And what I always tell them when they wonder why our family makes this rule is that it's so much easier to learn an instrument when you're a child, just like learning a language. And they'll just have it. They'll have it. And if they decide when they're 20 they don't want to play an instrument, that's great. But a bigger tragedy would be when they're 20 decide that they'd like to learn an instrument. And then, of course, they can. I want to encourage anybody to learn an instrument, whatever age you are. But it's so much easier when you're young.
Okay. Good answer. And listeners, if you have any students out there or children that need to practice this summer, it sounds like August 12th through the 14th would be a great time. 3-day intensive workshop for violin, viola, and cello, and bass, right? Mm-hmm. Sounds like fun. Are we missing anything, you two?
We do have volunteer opportunities, also in exchange for tuition. So if you want your students to attend, you can come out and be one of the parent volunteers as well.
Sounds very accessible as well. And Reggie, will you give us the contact information one more time, please?
Jazzandclassics.org, or you can call the office at 463-3378.
All right, Reggie Schapp and Marta Lestufka, thank you both for your time today.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks.
Join us for the next live television recording of Writer Showcase. The theme is open and includes works by John Urban, Taylor Ciambra, Rachel Riley, and Justin Herman. The stories take us from the top of Eagle Crest to the streets of Anchorage and explore everything from love to addiction to disappointment with both humor and poignancy. Readers are Boston Christopher, Alicia Hughes-Scandies, Denise Scott, and Brandon Demery. Admission is free this coming Wednesday at 360 at 7 p.m. sharp. Info at 360north.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 1st. It's about 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and also in the studio with me now is John Urban. He's one of the local writers who will be participating in this Wednesday night's Writers Showcase. Welcome to the show, John.
Howdy.
Thanks for coming in out of this beautiful sunny day. I know you're a house painter. Is one of the hats that you wear, and it sounds like you're really busy right now.
Yeah, it's a hazard of the weather, but it's all coming to an end tomorrow here. So
yeah, that's what
I'm starting to relax.
Yeah, I hear you. It looks like we have some rain in the forecast. But another hat that you wear is a writer, and the piece that you've given us for Wednesday night or submitted is called Deluge, and actor Brandon Demery is going to be reading that. Looking forward to it. How did you hear about Writer Showcase, if I may ask?
I went to the Christmas show and last December, and it was quite good. Just was kind of drawn in by Jeff Kirsch and stayed for a really good show.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And Jeff, of course, is very talented. And listeners, if you're not aware of Writer Showcase or haven't heard of it yet, we do about three of the shows per season. And John's referring to the holiday show that we generally have. I think we did that just before Thanksgiving. That sound about right, John?
Yeah.
Something like that?
It all blends.
Yeah, right. And then we did another show called Journeys. They're all sort of thematic. And now we're going into our last show of the 2014-2015 season. And this one's actually writer's choice, so we didn't have a theme for this. And hopefully we'll be doing three again next year. Usually that kicks off with that holiday show. But this one is indeed writer's choice. It's this Wednesday night. It's free. It's downstairs at 360. Starts at 7. We'd love to have you all down there. John, so your piece, Deluge, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's kind of based on a song that I heard driving down Egan on K2 about 10 years ago, and it's called Flood by Annie Gallup, and it's basically about she's living on a river and waiting for the things the river brings her when it floods, and I figured that that could be applied to a mountain as well and waiting for the snow.
Okay, and how often do you like to write?
I used to write catalog copy and for Snowboarder magazine, and I got too old and gave that job to Chris Currier, and he's become a helicopter pilot, so I think I made a bad move.
Well, among the things I like about this piece, Deluge, you really sort of capture life at Eagle Crest and just sort of, I guess, the ski bum's life, the consummate skier or snowboarder's life, and what it's like when you sort of live for that. And it sounds like this comes from your experience. It's nonfiction or parts of it. You lived that life here in Juneau, didn't you, for a while?
Yeah. I tried to keep everything in it, something that I actually did, which kind of made it boring, but it's another universe here. You know, it's apart from the legislative, apart from the commercial, apart from the cruise ships, and you don't really fit. But as long as it's snowing, you don't really care.
Can you tell us about maybe one of the characters in your piece?
Since
that's radio friendly.
I just would like to thank kind of my sponsor, Roger Ramsey, who left town a few years ago, but is here, a couple couple weeks a year when it's good. So, I met him in Bartlett. He showed me how to make my own casts and, a lot of life skills.
So just to back up there for a sec, make your own casts. Tell us about that.
Well, Roger had a broken arm, and he didn't like the range of motion on his Bartlett hospital cast, even though it was perfectly good. So he disassembled it and made his own, just something that was easier for him to go back skiing with. So that and the huge cost savings were pretty inspirational to me.
All right, John. Well, we're really looking forward to Wednesday night and hearing Brandon's depiction of your story. Deluge should be a lot of fun. Again, readers include Donnie Gott, Boston Christopher, Brandon Demery, Alicia Scandies, and writers include local Rachel Riley, an Anchorage writer, Justin Herman, of course, John Urban here, and a Sitka writer, Taylor C. Ambra. So you're coming, right, on Wednesday night, John?
Oh, yes.
Sounds good. We'll have a seat for you right up front. But thanks for coming into the show today, John. It's been nice talking to you. The show is this Wednesday night. It's supposed to rain, so it's a great night to come inside for some good entertainment. It's this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Admission is free downstairs at 360. I'll see you on Wednesday, John.
Great. Thank you.
To feel connected, to turn on the radio. My name is Mark Wheeler. I've been a member of KTO for about 20 years. Every year we try to give a little bit more.
I think about what Juno would be like without public radio. It's probably not a place I'd like to live. The social fabric that public media builds in this town really enriched my life.
Renew or start your membership at ktoo.org.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Tomorrow I'll be your host again, and we'll talk with the National Ambassador of Youth Literature, Kate DiCamillo, about her visit to the Juno Libraries this week. Susie Martin, Juno's featured artist at the Canvas, will be here to highlight her first Friday show. We'll talk about the upcoming Trauma and Suicide Prevention Conference with Hillary Young and Julie Neihart. And we'll find out about this year's Only Fools Run at Midnight event with guests Justin Showman and Tristan Knutson-Lombardo. And we'll get the details about this year's Juno Symphony Youth Solo Competition. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on K2 News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and on live, online via ktoo.org. The weather looks like tonight partly cloudy, lows around 48. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain in the afternoon. And Wednesday, rain likely, highs around 59. Thursday through Friday, rain, highs around 59. Stay tuned for the news.